Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
What's going on, everybody? Hope you are having a wonderful week so far. You are listening to the Will Clark podcast, and my name is Will Clark. No shit. Before we start, I would absolutely love it if you could hit subscribe. If you don't subscribe, or if you are watching or listening on Spotify or Apple Podcasts, please click follow and download these episodes. The more downloads, it's funny enough, but the more people will get to listen to this, and I'd absolutely love it. And if you like this podcast and you've got friends in electronic music or the music industry or anything that interests, or come out raving to see these DJs that I'm having on the podcast, please share it to them. It means the absolute world to me. The more people we can get on this, the more of a community we can grow, which means I can bring more interesting guests. And talking about interesting guests, Azeka, I noticed her pop up in the scene just after COVID. She's been releasing some amazing music. I've been on some great lineups with her in the past. She's a really good DJ. She's extremely passionate about music and growing amazing community-based parties in the industry as well, and kind of really pushing forward of great music and great vibes at parties. And especially, she runs a party called Dirty Disco in Chicago, which is based around women in the scene and like allowing a safe space for women in the music industry to come rave, which I absolutely love. It needs to be talked about a little bit more and also promoted more. I think it's very important. So we got into that on the podcast. We got into a lot of things, spoke about her introduction into the industry, issues in the industry, social media, music, all the good things, and chewing gum, a key part of the episode. So without further ado, Azeka. And we are live. Azeka, how are you, mate?
I'm good, how are you?
Yeah, really good, thanks. Really good. What how's sunny Chicago? I know we just spoke about it.
Like every 3 days it'll be like summer, and then all of a sudden it'll thunderstorm, and then it'll snow. It's been really bizarre weather. So
just classic Midwest weather, right?
Yeah, just like that transition from winter to spring. Like you have like the 1 week of spring and then it's summer.
What have you got in the background? Is it like some like rainforest thing?
I actually put cat TV so that my cat would stay over there. Otherwise, they'll be like all over this.
I've literally never heard of cat TV. What is that about?
Oh my God. It's amazing if you have cats that have a ton of energy. It's just like sometimes there's squirrels, sometimes there's birds, and the cats, I'm sure at some point you'll see my cat like jump up at the TV. It keeps their attention better than you'd ever expect.
Oh, I love that so much. I love that. So are you from Chicago?
I'm from just outside of Chicago, about an hour north of Chicago, a town called Rockford. But
okay.
I've been here for like 12 years now.
I was going to say, ever since I've known you, which I can't remember the first time I met you. I think it was on ship years ago.
Yeah.
But yeah, I thought you were from Chicago.
Yeah, I mean, I tell people I'm from here.
Are you one of those? Living in Detroit, the people get so annoyed with that. When they don't live in Detroit and they live in the suburbs, but they tell everybody they're from Detroit, and people from Detroit get so mad. It's hilarious.
Chicagoans are the same. Yeah. Like when I was younger, I would tell people, if I was like visiting somewhere far away, I would just say, oh, I'm from Chicago. And then people from Chicago would hear that and they'd be like, no, you're not. They get so mad about it.
I love it. Well, in Detroit, because I lived in Detroit for 5.5 years, and now I'm moving outside of Detroit. So I'm going to be one of those people that say that now, that I'm like living in Detroit, but don't actually live in Detroit. But I can happily say I lived in Detroit. So
yeah, at least you did live in Detroit, so you can say
at some point. But then I pussied out and got out. So
I know, that's the thing. Me and Kai, we've like loosely started having conversations about moving to the suburbs of Chicago, and I'm just not quite ready yet to leave the city, but I think he's like a little bit more ready because he's from such a small town too, so yeah. He's kind of like, I don't know,
I'm sure you're like, how long have you been full-time been DJing?
Oh my gosh, what, so it's time is time doesn't exist anymore.
It's crazy, so hard, right? Especially after like COVID.
Was it
pre-COVID you were playing like full-time?
No, so it was just after COVID.
Okay,
like,
cool. Yeah.
I kind of like, that was the only job I had as soon as COVID ended. So, cool. So whatever year that was.
How good is that feeling?
It is great. It's amazing.
Like being able to, yeah, we have a fucking great job. We're so lucky. It's amazing.
We do. It's been like a crazy adjustment for me, to be honest. Yeah. Like going from 0 to 100, it feels like touring is definitely something you have to like figure out how to do. Yeah, but it's amazing. I love it so much. And it's just, yeah.
Let's talk about that. Let's talk about the adjustment from, what were you doing before music?
So before COVID, I worked for an interior design magazine.
Oh, cool. Yeah.
And then just before COVID, I kind of decided I didn't want to work in an office job anymore.
Yeah.
So I got my interior decorating license and I was starting my own interior design business.
Yeah.
And then the world completely shut down.
Yeah.
So there was no business, there was no work. And that's when I just decided, I mean, not even by choice, but just by, that was all there was to do in our house, was to start working on music, because we had our studio in our house. We couldn't leave the house. And so that's when like diving into music full time really started, those 3 years when we were just like stuck here.
That's amazing. What is the adjustment? Because like, I think everybody's had, I would like to say 90% of most people in the industry have had like a full time job. But for some people it was like not so long ago, some people it was fucking years ago, but like, what is that adjustment for you? Like, what actually is the hard bit to kind of like be like, oh wow, this is so abnormal as a normal job?
I mean, I think being like completely nocturnal is something yeah. that you have to adjust to after living like a somewhat normal life.
Yeah.
Like, and also I think, so being nocturnal, also preparing yourself to be up late at night and then perform in front of people late at night when your body is so used to like winding down and you're having to like pick it up. I also think like to the traveling, being in and out of airports, the like nightmares that no matter how prepared you are, there's always some sort of like something goes wrong.
Yeah.
There's traffic on the highway. You're almost missing a flight. Like your luggage is lost. There's just like so many things that you can't be prepared for that happen. And I think like after living a life that's quite routine, you know, if you're working a 9-to-5 job, you have like a routine.
Yeah,
your life
totally.
Is pretty, like, this is what happens every day. But like all of a sudden being thrown into what feels like chaos can be difficult. And also I've learned after last year I started touring really heavily, and I was also drinking a lot, like drinking to DJ, because I felt like that's how I vibed with a crowd and that's yeah. how I like got my energy to perform. And I realized that I was starting to have like crazy mood swings. I was unable to relax when I was at home. I was having a hard time working on music. I just realized I had to stop drinking especially when I'm touring. So that was a big learning thing for me, that like I need to not be drinking every time I DJ, because it's just like, it was starting to make me lose my mind.
It's such a strange thing, isn't it? The whole alcohol conversation. Cause I think alcohol and drugs, I think it's happening more and more in this industry. And like, I'm all for it. I don't drink. I haven't for a long time, but like, it's amazing what we do as artists. Like, because I think from an outsider's point of view, well, we do have the best job. I think before we get into this, we have the best job in the world. But realistically, like, whilst we're working, everybody else is having fun, right? And of course, we're having fun, but not every show is fun. Not everything is the best time of our lives. Like, even for example, like, I know this isn't going to go out in time, but this weekend just gone, like, my flight was 2 hours delayed. I missed my connection. My other flight then landed at 11:30 at night. I then had to be at the show by 12. I then was up at 8:00 the next morning, go to another place, play till 4:00 in the morning. My flight was at 6:30 in the morning. So you're like literally just not, you're not going anywhere. But during that time, like, you also have to look like you're having fun. And like, you also have to perform. And I think the whole alcohol thing, when you add alcohol or drugs or like unhealthy food or just anything unhealthy to you, like that poisons you, that adds so much more stress to your body, which then adds more stress to everything else. And I just don't think people realize like the toll that it has on your body.
Yeah, I think I'm lucky in that I like kind of started this a bit older than a lot of people start DJing, when like they're in their like prime party years and like you're like, this is the sickest job ever. I'm going to party everywhere I go. It's so much fun. So I've like done so much partying that now I'm kind of like, I don't have that itch as much. But like, yeah, it's crazy because, like you said, it's everyone's night out. Everyone's there to party and to have fun, but it is a job. And so it's like, I think I've had to like train my brain to like, you can have fun. This can still be really fun for you without all of like the substances, you know, like you can still feed off of other people's energy. You can still like let loose without killing yourself because and then that's another thing, like when you're hungover and you get to the airport, you're like, I'm gonna get a McDonald's, and then you eat a McDonald's and then your stomach hurts, and then you get on a plane. It's just like, it's just a snowball effect, and then all of a sudden you're like, I feel like absolute shit.
I never forget, like, I won't mention names, I'll wait for him to come on the podcast and say it. You know who it is. But he doesn't drink anymore, but he was known to just be an absolute partier, and he would always miss flights, but it would cost him an absolute fortune. And then I remember him texting me one morning going, mate, I've missed my flight and I'm headlining a festival in a certain city, and I'm in Dallas, and there's no other flights apart from a private jet. And I'm like, how much is that private jet going to cost you? And it was like 27 grand.
Oh my God.
And you're just like, okay, well, you've just lost all your money, like, because of alcohol. And I think that's the thing. It's like, there comes a point where it's like, I know what we're doing is an amazing job, but it's still a job. It's still business. And I think you still have to look after your like business needs, because that's the only way we're getting paid.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, I just think I have to remind myself all the time, like, this is a job. Yeah. This is actually how I pay my bills. This is like, you know, I'm going to have to retire someday. Like, I'm spending all of my money on like whatever.
On clothes. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's a whole different
conversation. it always amazes me that as well, the amount of people that like the amount of money people spend on clothes. I love fashion. It's amazing, but it's so expensive.
Is. And I feel like, I don't know, now that I'm like in the scene a bit more and like seeing other people, I'm like, how do you guys have all of this? Like, I see people all the time and I'm like, I know how much that outfit costs, and I know how much your outfit you wore yesterday cost. How are you wearing this? But I think I'm picking up on like this whole gifting thing.
Yeah.
And like, I keep telling my manager, I'm like, how do I do this? How do I get this?
Like, you should be able to get a lot of that stuff. It's way harder for dudes. Way harder for dudes. Yeah.
That's surprising to me.
I've got a lot of girlfriends that are in the industry that just get sent everything. And it's great. I'm like, it's fucking sick.
I'm like, I can't get sent anything.
You should be able to, though. There should be no reason.
I don't know. I need to start asking around how I get involved in this because, yeah, I can't afford to be buying all these clothes.
No, but it always amazes me when I see, like, because obviously we know how much people earn roughly, right? Because we're on the same lineups. We know, like, roughly how much somebody's worth. And I'm like, dude, your T-shirt's worth more than what you're getting paid for this show.
I know, it's crazy. That's why I'm like, there's no way. There's either people are buying things and then selling them immediately after, yeah. Or there's, like, I don't know, renting. I would rent. I would be happy to rent some clothes for a big show. But yeah,
it's really interesting because I did a photo shoot the other day and had this guy called Charlie Clark who does, like, quite a lot of fashion stuff in the UK in the music scene, and he works with quite a few artists. And I can't remember the person's name that he was talking to, but I shouldn't name the name. I think I know who it is. I'll tell you after. But she went to him and pretty much was like, I want to be in fashion. I'm a DJ. I want to be in fashion and I want to be known as, like, the fashionable person in music. And they're like, okay, cool. You need a budget for every show. So you need a certain amount of money for every single show for you to be the fashion icon in whatever you look like, for your Instagram, for everything. And then, yeah, so it's an investment. It is a business move because now that person is now getting booked to be front on, like, catwalks and things like that, like front, and they're getting paid to do that. So I think it is definitely an investment if that's something that people want to go into. I didn't know about it. I didn't know how much money there was in fashion as well until the other day. And I was like, holy fuck. Like,
really?
Dude, people are getting paid bank just to go on those things.
Really? Yeah. Like, so you mean, like, the people that are DJing at Fashion Week and stuff? Like, do you get paid a lot for doing that?
I presume so, yeah. There's way more money in fashion than there is in music. And I did not know this.
See, I got to get involved with this. I always see, you know who, I think Chloe Kelly is so cool. She's, like, one of my favorite DJs. Yeah. And I saw that she was just with Dua Lipa, who I'm obsessed with, at Fashion Week. And she had, like, Burberry dress her. And I was like, God, how the fuck do I do this?
This is the thing. All these people have, like, fashion consultants. It's a completely another brand. It's another business. And I think it's really interesting. And I see it happening more in our industry. I'm just for everyone to make as much money as possible at the end of the day. Yeah. Like, I want to see everybody be as successful as possible. Like, if I don't know why, but it might be interesting for you because obviously you're married to an Englishman, but, like, being English, like, what, having extreme success financially in your career is kind of a bit of a frowned upon thing. Like, people, there's, like, that kind of tall poppy syndrome to a certain extent, whereas America's completely the opposite. So how do you feel that? How do you find about that? Like, what's your thoughts on extreme success in business and music?
I mean, I think everyone should make as much money as they possibly can, but I also think that it's always kind of weird to see people who become so successful and then you can kind of tell that, like, their passion has died. And, like, you know, I think it's really important to, like, stay true to what you love about your work. And, like, you know, I don't think I'd want success at the cost of, like, art or my passion. That being said, I'm still, like, you know, very early in my career and I know a lot of money. You know, like, when people are like, work with this artist or do this and this is the fee, and you're like, wow, that's more money than I've ever had in my life. But at the same time, it's like, I don't know, we're in the business of art, and I think if you can make a lot of money making your art and being true to yourself, and then that's amazing. But if you have to, like, completely change what you love and stop doing what you love, then I don't think it's worth it.
Yeah, I agree. I totally agree. And I feel like it must be weird because there's obviously like huge artists, right? Like we're talking like the Guettas, the like Diplos, mm-hmm. and like all the people that have had extreme, like Tiësto, that had extreme success in this industry, that it feels like, I don't know because I've not spoke to them and I'd love to, but it feels like it's almost like just a factory line that they have to keep because they have such big teams. They have to pay the bills. Would you want that?
I don't think so. I honestly, so it's really funny. I was actually just the other day, I had this sort of experience after one of my shows that made me feel like, oh my gosh, I'm getting this like small taste of how, not, I don't want to use the word crazy, but how excited people are to be around you or to like talk to you. And I actually texted Dom Dalla, who's one of my friends, and I was, because he's, I feel like he's seen like in the last like year or something, like he's like a pop star now, which like, you know, things have changed for him so much. And I texted him and I was like, is it weird, like feeling like you can't just be normal? Because, you know, like people like David Guetta or Diplo or whatever, like it has to be weird to go out in public.
Yeah.
It has to be weird to like, you can't just show up at an after party that your friends are going to, or like, you know, things that you have to have like security and yeah, you're loaded and you can go on fancy vacations and you can have this nice house. But like at the cost of living like a normal person.
Yeah.
I don't know. Like, I don't think I could deal with like the fame that much. Like, I think that would be difficult.
I think it's really interesting in the DJ world because I think there's levels, right? And when you're like Billie Eilish, you can't literally leave your house. Like, mm-hmm. you can't fart without someone kind of writing a story about it. Like, there's literally zero, zero kind of life, I guess. Mm-hmm. But all the money. Which kind of is weird, but I don't know. I don't have that much money, so I wouldn't know what those circles look like, if that makes sense. But that's like, true. I'm sure there's certain situations where like you're going to places where people have the same amount of money as you, and you're not famous in their
weird.
Yeah, you're not famous in their life, right?
Yeah.
But it's definitely weird because DJs, I feel like we're not that obviously, like it's weird.
Like in the grand scheme,
in the grand scheme of life, we're fine, right? Like occasionally, you walk down the street and someone's like, "Wee," and it's like random as fuck. But like, yeah, I think we're fortunate with that. But again, there's that also the levels of that, and like I think Calvin Harris probably could walk down the street and a lot of people not know who he is.
Yeah,
but like.
I think he's done it all right, though.
Oh my god, like, he's done it.
He's
the best.
Just a little farmer boy, like living his best life. Like if I could just be anyone in the industry, it would be Calvin Harris. Like he's got his little restaurant in Ibiza, and he's just absolutely living.
Yeah, that would be the goal, right?
But then I guess someone like Diplo is like intentionally so forward facing. So like he's like hanging out with celebrities. He's taking photos with Victoria's Secret models. He's like, I mean, maybe he really loves the like celebrity aspect of it. But yeah, I guess for the most part, most DJs are a little bit more low key. So you don't have to worry about being swarmed every time you're out in public.
I think we're just all a little bit weird.
Yeah.
Like realistically, I think... in the crux of it, even like with, I know you're like, you said you got into it later on in life, but like you spent years in the studio. We're weird that we can just spend that long in the studio, like by ourselves, like just in a dark room. For me, it's like, even like having, like I've got curtains in my studio and when I was younger, I used to just like not let any sunlight in. And now I'm like turning into an old man. I'm like, I need sunlight into my studios and everything like that. But like, yeah, it's just we just spend so much time by ourselves in hotel rooms, on planes, like we're by ourselves all the time. Realistically, like do you tour with a tour manager or anything?
No. And the thing is, I've always been the type of, I've always enjoyed being alone,
yeah.
which I think helps. Like, I've always enjoyed my alone time. I get kind of overwhelmed in like overly social like situations. Like, I have like a social limit yeah. where I can like hang out with people to a certain extent, but then I have to like be by myself. And I think that's helped. That's been beneficial, like in this industry. But it is crazy. There are definitely times where I get to a city, if it's really cold outside, or if there's like nothing to do, if it's like sort of a quiet city, and I'm just like sat in this sort of like dingy hotel room, and I'm like, well, this is like pretty depressing.
Yeah.
Or like, you know, like, what do? I just work on music. And it's like, yeah, you're just like in a dark room by yourself yeah. as the world's like passing by.
But then do you find when you're working on music in a hotel, do you find it inspiring?
I find that I get more done.
Really?
Because I have no distractions. Yeah. And usually it's like, if I'm trying to get something done before a gig, I have like a timeline. It's like, cool, I have 3 hours in this hotel to try and get this finished. And I like push myself to get something finished. Whereas if I'm in the studio or if I'm working at home, I like days will go by and I'll be like, okay, I've done nothing because I'm just so distracted.
Yeah, that's fine. I have this book right by me. That I write things down, and I like lists, so I like have to tick things off, and the like coming to the end of the day and ticked everything off is like the best feeling. But I understand the whole distraction thing. It's like,
I actually need to start doing that. I was just telling my manager earlier today, you know, this is all still pretty fresh yeah. to me. Like, what you've been doing for so many years is like, I'm what, on year three?
It's amazing.
Of doing this. And so I'm still learning like how to deal with like my tasks. Mm. You know, I have my like taxes like looming over my head right now. And I'm like, do your taxes, sit down and do it. And I just like every day I'm like, no, I'm not going to do it today. It's like, I need to start writing lists, because
lists are key. Lists are key. However, let's talk about taxes. Just fucking pay somebody to do it. Like, even if you lose money, just fucking pay. Like, in my mind, I don't know what you're like with maths and figures and anything like that, but I'm just like, I'm like, I can't trust myself. There's certain things yeah. I can't trust myself to do, so I'm just going to pay somebody to do it.
Yeah. Yeah, I think, so I have this, I've hired an accountant.
Sick.
He's going to do my taxes. Literally all I have to do is go to a folder, get all of my expenses, put them on this Excel spreadsheet and send them to him, and then he'll do it. But for some reason, I'm just like, I'm avoiding it like the plague. I know it'll take me like an hour and a half to do it, but I can't be fucked. I'm such a procrastinator, and that is something that is really starting to bite me in the ass with music, with everything. So I need to get on this list thing and like...
I'm going to text you every day. I'm going to text you every day for the next month until you do your taxes.
Honestly, please do, because I know like April 11th is going to come around and I'm going to be like, fuck, like
yeah.
meeting myself.
I think I've done all mine already. I think everything got done and submitted wow. and paid. I'm like, I've got really bad OCD though. Like if...
I need some of that.
If like... I love deadlines. Deadlines are like my favorite thing.
Really?
Yeah, because I don't know what it was, but like as a kid, my parents were never strict growing up, but like they always like just like I had like a really good childhood. Like I was really fortunate. But with like schoolwork and homework, I don't know if it's the same in America, but like we'd get homework at school and my parents would just be like, get home and just do your homework straight away. And then you don't have to ever have to worry about it. They're like, it's done then for the rest of the week. It's all done. And you can do whatever you want. You can go play rugby. You can go make music. You can do whatever you want. And I was like, yeah, makes sense. So every time I got home, I'd do it straight away.
Yeah.
And well, and I think that's my brain now.
That's amazing. Honestly, like you make it sound so easy to have that mentality.
Oh, yeah. The only reason why it's easy is because I've done it my whole life.
Yeah. I feel like my whole life, I think my dad was very much like that too. He was really strict actually, but he would make me come home, do my homework straight away before yeah. I was allowed to do anything else. But I think with my dad, it was always like you're going to do this because I'm telling you to do this kind of thing, which pissed me off so much. And And so then I think that caused me to adapt to this, like, no, I'm going to wait till the last possible minute and still get it done just to show you that I can do it.
Fuck you, and dad.
Exactly. So, like, yeah, every time I miss a deadline, everyone can just, like, blame my dad. He's great. But, like, yeah, for some reason, I've always had this, like, I've pushed things to the last minute and I always get things done. I never miss deadlines. Like, even if it was like studying for exams at university, like, I always did well, but I would wait till the last minute, stress myself out so much about it, like be worried sick because I pushed it so late, and then it would all work out in the end. So then I'd be like, okay, well, that worked out, so I can do it again next time.
Do it again next time.
Yeah. Which, it's so, you know, funny. I need to change that mentality because it's too much stress.
That's the thing for me, is I don't like stress. Like, I'm not really a stress head. So, like, for example, DJ mixes. I absolutely hate doing DJ mixes. Like, I know it sounds stupid, but for me, doing a DJ mix is like no desire. And occasionally, as we all have to do a DJ mix occasionally. And my management know how much I hate it, so they'll turn down everything until we actually have to do it. But then when they're like, well, we've got to get you to do a DJ mix, I'm like, okay, I will literally try and get it done within 24 hours of them telling me. Because the thought of it in my head, going, waking up in the morning going, oh, I've got to do that DJ mix. Oh, I've got to do that DJ. I'm like, I won't put any time into it. It's really bad because I just can't stand it. So I'm like, okay, let's bosh it out in 30 minutes. Like, let's go to my old DJ mix I did, pull out three records, put three more records in, and I'm done.
But, you know, what is it about DJ mixes that feel like such a daunting task? It's like, it's literally what we do for work, but for some reason, just sitting down and like putting together this hour mix feels like, I don't know.
I think because it's, I don't know about you, but for me, and I can only speak for myself, but it's like, there isn't really, like, for me, when I DJ, it's, you like read the audience, and it sounds wanky as fuck, but it's like you're reading the audience, you're like getting a bit of back and forth from the audience. So like, you play a record, oh, they like that, sweet, I know what to play next, or oh, they didn't like that. But with a DJ mix, it's like, well, I'm just going to throw a few records together. Like, there's no, I gone of the days of like DJ mixes like being a big thing. I think, unless you're doing like an essential mix, realistically, yeah. I think that's the only mix that actually matters nowadays.
Yeah, I agree. Like, do people even really go out of their way to listen to them other than like four big ones?
Yeah. I like the Apple, what Apple do with the like the live, they like, oh, we recorded a festival and like your set's live, so people can listen to that. I like that because people that have like listened to the set can like go and kind of get memories back from that time. Love that. But the idea of making a DJ set is so boring.
And also a lot of times, oh my God, just butt in my face. A lot of mixes too, you go to, I listen to a lot of mixes on SoundCloud, especially when I'm traveling. Yeah, I do, just because, especially if I'm like stuck with making my own music, sometimes I'll try and go to mixes to hear like, just like get some vibes from like what other people are playing, people that I like. But I realized that, you know, most mixes, people play like music that they don't play out. Yeah. They play like, you know, like kind of just throwaway music these days, because like, you know, it's a mix. Not many people are going to listen to it. You also like maybe don't want to give away all the music that you're playing out. Yeah. Like, so a lot of time I feel like mixes are just kind of boring.
Yeah.
Like, there, people don't put that much love into them anymore.
I definitely don't.
I still, for some reason, every time I have to do a DJ mix, I like get a bit stressed out about it, and I'm like, I want it to be really cool. I want it to like do the, you know, because I just feel that pressure all the time still, because like I've just started doing this and I feel like everything that I do is so important. But I'm sure I'll get to a point where I'm just like, okay, cool, let me just grab these songs and throw them together.
What does that pressure feel like?
I feel like sometimes I'm like my own worst enemy or my own biggest critic, because I feel, not only because I'm a woman, but because I'm married to another DJ, because I'm American, I feel like so much is against me already. I feel like people are just waiting for me to like fuck up so royally.
Yeah.
So everything that I do, I'm like, even like before my shows still, I get like really stressed out that like, I'm going to have this massive train wreck, or like, I'm gonna clear the dance floor, or like someone's gonna leave and say that I'm a terrible DJ, because there are people that are saying that without ever even hearing me DJ, or without ever like knowing anything about me. There's already people that say crazy things. And so I'm not yet to the point where I'm like, I don't fucking care about that stuff. Like, it, I do see it. It does irk me. And so I feel like I want to prove to people like what I am and what I'm all about so much that it definitely stresses me out. And I definitely like, am very, I want to put my best foot forward all the time with everything I do. Just because I don't want to give people an opportunity to say like, she doesn't deserve this.
It's so weird to me that like, I can't even imagine that feeling, because I think obviously being a dude, it's very like, I don't get any shit online. Like, I'm very fortunate. I've had like a couple of occasions where people have said some weird shit and I'm like, whatever, it is what it is. Yeah. But like we've all got like female friends that are in the industry as well. And it's crazy how much shit just dudes give them on, like, on the internet. And I'm like,
it's so bizarre.
But it's like, nobody is saying that to your face.
No.
And I'm just like, these fucking dudes are just a bunch of dickheads. And I don't think they realize the power that they have on people's mental health. And I don't want to like go down that cliche route, but I've seen it. And you're just like, I don't understand it.
Yeah, it's just this weird thing about anonymity, or like not being able to like see someone's face when you say, like, because some people say some of the most out of pocket shit, like where you're like, if you said this to someone's face, you would have to deal with seeing how that makes them feel. And it would make you feel like the biggest piece of shit on the planet. Yeah. Because like, I even not even just towards me, but some I feel like a lot of women, as they get bigger and bigger in the industry, the more out of pocket shit people start 100%. Saying. And you see some of the posts on, like, you know, other female artists, like, things, and you're like, who raised you? Yeah. How can you, like, say this to another human being and, like, just not care at all? And I don't know. It's just this weird thing with, like, online. Like, because, yeah, in person, no one's ever going to say this stuff. No. But for some reason, men can just go online and say, like, crazy things and make crazy accusations, and just, I don't know, it's a really bizarre thing, and it's not that fun to have to deal with it.
No, I can imagine. I've seen it. I talked to Vanessa quite a lot about it, because like, me and her are pretty close, although online we act like we hate each other, but like it's like, we talk about it occasionally, like some of the stuff that you just see and I'm like, it's wild. I don't understand it. I really don't understand it.
I don't either. I think it's, I don't know. Yeah, I don't know. I don't want to make anyone mad, but I think
there's make people mad. Fucking like, people need to know about it, because it's like, I think if you're not a dude in the industry, because it is dudes, like, don't get me wrong, like, girls can say some horrible stuff and they're not nice to each other, if you know what I mean, but it's mostly dudes saying shit to girls, most of 99% of the time. But it's like, I don't understand it. I'd like to ask, because I've had it a few times where like somebody has said something and I just call them out. I DM them. I once had this dude just like constantly giving me, like, saying awful shit on my social media. And this was like probably the only time I've had it. He was saying awful shit on my Instagram. Like, not necessarily to me, but just like trying to be funny.
Yeah.
And like, I'm like, dude, this isn't funny. And I DM'd him. I was like, dude, what's your problem? Like, I don't even know who you are. Like, I've never done anything to you. Like, what is your problem? And he was like, oh, dude, I'm really sorry. I was just being trying to be funny. And I'm like, yeah, but you're not. So, like, just don't say anything. If you've got nothing nice to say, don't say it. But I just, I don't understand it. And it angers me a lot.
I think that, like, my personal opinion.
Yeah.
And this might piss some people off. Bring but I think that, like, there's a lot of men that idolize male DJs and they wish that they could be a part of that.
Yeah.
And then they see a woman doing what they can't do. And it like sets something off in them that's like particularly shitty.
Yeah.
Where they're just like, fuck this woman. She actually can't do this. Yeah. She can't do this. Like, if I can't do this, there's no fucking way she can be doing this. And it's like this weird thing that, like, it's like an ego thing, because I think a lot of men have, like, issues dealing with their, like, egos.
Yeah.
And when you see a woman doing something, and I think this goes in, like, any industry.
Of
when
course.
Men that fail at something or can't do something see a woman doing it, it's like it ignites like a particular fire in them, and they're like, I'm gonna try and bring this person down, or I'm gonna try and like tell myself that this person can't actually do this.
Which I think is absolutely fine to think that, right? If that's if that's you as a human being, like, we all think horrible stuff now and again. Like, we all do. Like, we'd be unhuman to say we all think amazing thoughts all the time. And there's times we all get jealous, there's times we get envious. There's times that we think things that we wouldn't ever act upon, right? I think that's totally normal. Mm-hmm. But then to say it, it's just a different thing. There's just like levels. It's like, you can be thinking that, but you don't have to fucking say it.
I know. It's, but yeah. And then I'm always like, where are your friends? Do you have any friends that see you saying this stuff to someone? Because like, if I ever did that, I would immediately be getting text messages that were like, yo, are you okay? Like, what's your fucking deal? You know, so it's just, I don't know. It's a weird thing. And I think a lot of these accounts are also fake. Mm-hmm. Like, I've had a couple of accounts that like continuously harass me online, like constantly posting things. And then I go and I'm like, oh, this is like, you have zero followers. Yeah. Like, this is a fake account. And then I've actually started just blocking everyone who like says weird stuff to me, because it's just not worth like engaging with them or even seeing the things they have to say. It's just block and be done. Like,
it's so much easier. So much easier just to be gone with them. So weird. Yeah. I don't understand human beings.
I know. Same. Oh, please. I never understand human beings. So much about just humanity in general. I'm just like, I don't get it.
What's your thoughts on this? And, because I think it's like, when I had Moby on the podcast, he like said some things where like he struggles when successful artists don't use their platform to talk about the world or push art forward or anything, or like in a privileged situation or position to kind of help grow the world in whatever form you want. I think a lot of people took that politically, which he wasn't just talking about politics. He was talking about everything. What's your thoughts on that generally? And I think it goes back to that initial thing of what we were talking about is like the art and over business.
Yeah. I think that as an artist, it's important to be yourself and be genuine online when you have a platform, because people look to you, not just for like your art, but like for like some sort of connection, or like if someone really looks up to you. I think sharing your genuine thoughts on things is a good thing to do. Mm-hmm. With that said, I don't think that any artist should feel obligated to talk about their political stances, their, you know, to get involved in conversations that are really like controversial, or, you know, like you can have those private. I actually got into a thing on Twitter recently.
Every time. It's always Twitter.
It's always Twitter. Where I posted something about something completely unrelated to something.
Yeah.
And someone came at me and was like, oh, so you feel this type of way about this thing.
Yeah.
And I was like, well, actually, I never said that. Nothing I said had anything to do with this thing. And then they're like trying to like get me to engage with them about this topic. And I was just like, you know what? I actually love having conversations about these things with people that I feel safe speaking to in person, whether it's my friends or whatever, like engaging conversations where we can learn and grow from each other and like have a healthy dialogue. And like online is not that place. Like if you get involved, it's just no one should feel obligated to talk about these things online, because there is so much anger and so much hurt and so much divide. And if you like even try to word things in the nicest way possible, it's going to cause outrage. And it's not fair to it's not fair to artists to put that on them. And so, I mean, I get that you should use your platform but I also get like, who has the time or energy to be berated online?
Yeah.
Just for what? Like, I don't know. It's like, I don't think it's really worth it these days.
No, I totally agree. And I think for me, it's, I say this on a regular basis, like we're a tweet away from having our careers canceled.
Literally.
And I don't mean that in a horrible way, but like that genuinely stresses me out. I know I'm a good dude. I know I am. I know I'm a nice guy. Like I respect other people. However, like I could say one thing and nobody understand really my thought process and mm-hmm. it'd be my life gone, completely gone. And
like that.
Yeah. And there's been a lot of artists that have not necessarily done anything, but said something. Like I understand mm-hmm. if you've done something to somebody, that's completely different, completely yeah. different. But like saying something like, and it's been taken out of context. There's mm-hmm. a lot of people that are too big to be canceled, but I think at our level, you're so close to just like,
yeah,
just your whole career going. And I yeah. don't think people realize that. And again, it's like what you were saying is like, I don't, for me, like what we do is for people to escape all of that shit.
Mm-hmm.
Like if we're talking politics, if we're talking like controversial subjects, like go somewhere else.
Music that you yeah. go
I'm a fucking you know? Idiot.
Like, this the whole point of our career is to like get you to not think escape. About that stuff.
Yeah.
So, and you know, I feel like I'm pretty open on social media. I think sometimes maybe I even share a bit too much on Twitter.
Yeah.
But I, like you said, like I think that I'm a good person yeah. and I don't have any sort of like hateful or prejudice or like things that like, I don't even think I would say something that would like really upset people.
Yeah.
But sometimes like, I'll even say things like, I'll see a news, something in the news, and I'm like, this is so sad.
Mm.
And like, I even think like, is it okay for me to say that this thing is sad? Are people going to get really upset with me about saying that this is sad? Or like yeah. yesterday I tweeted like a joke. Also, another thing is I'm learning that people do not understand your sense of humor online.
Not at all.
No. So like, I have tweeted things before that are like me literally just like taking the piss completely, and then I'll put my phone down and look at it in an hour and people are like, you're this, you're like so, you're negative or like whatever, and I'm like, no, that was a joke, that was a literal joke. But yeah, so I'm having to think twice about that. But yesterday I even tweeted like, I don't think I trust people that buy spearmint gum. And I was like, is this okay for me to put online? Is someone gonna think that I'm personally don't like them because I like don't like spearmint gum? So I don't know, yeah, it's just a weird.
Yeah, but do you like the ice forest gum?
What's ice forest
is it gum? It's that fucking shit that you Americans have that tastes like so there's this thing that we
cubes?
No, I think it's like what flavor gum do you like?
So I prefer Orbit
Wintermint. That this is what I'm on about, not forest mint. Wintermint. Okay, this is you fucking Americans. Ask Kai when you speak to Kai and be like, Kai, does this Wintermint taste like Deep Heat? So Deep Heat is something that in sports in the UK you rub on your muscles,
and icy hot.
Yeah, but the other way around. It's like icy hot, but it's not ice. It's just hot.
Okay.
So, and it smells like Wintermint.
Oh my God, I can't believe my favorite gum is the exact one you're talking about. See?
So every time when I first started coming to America and everyone would be like, offer me gum, I'd be like, why are you fucking chewing on this like Deep Heat shit? And everyone's like, what's Deep Heat? I'm like, oh yeah.
There, I need to ask Kai. And the funny thing about all of this is that the reason why I tweeted that yesterday is because I go in Kai's backpack and I pull out a pack of spearmint.
Yeah.
I was like, this is disgusting. Why do you have spearmint gum?
Because we're proper. We like real chewing gum.
Yeah, I guess so.
I love it. Other side, 2022. It's now at 9.3 million streams on Spotify. How does that feel?
It's crazy. It is like the most unexpected thing. So I made that song and sent it to Adam 10 because the whole reason why I made that song was because I was obsessed with this sound. I wanted to release something on Maccabee House so bad. I made it, sent it to him, and he's like, yeah, I don't really like this. He's like a very, very blunt person.
Yeah.
And he was like, yeah, not my vibe. Sorry, don't like the vocal. Pass. And so then I literally shelved that song. And that was one of the first songs I finished. And I was like, I'm done making music. It's my first no. And so I just put it back in my demos folder and wasn't going to send it to anyone. Didn't want to do anything with it. And then Higher Ground signed I've Been Waiting. And they were like, cool, do you have any other music to send? And so I just sent this demo folder, and Sam from Higher Ground comes back and he's like, this other side track, we want it. We want to this. He was like, he loved it.
Wow.
And I was like, okay, cool. Sure, let's release it. And it was it released and it was kind of a slow burner. At first it released and it got some people picked up on it, but then as the months went on, all of a sudden it was I was being sent videos of Michael Beebe playing it, so many people from such a variety of genres, and it was, and then since then it's just continued for the last couple of years. It's so weird how that song has just taken on a life of its own. And it's still I'll check my Spotify stats every, week or so. And it's still getting just listened to so much. And every time I play it, people lose their minds. And now I live in a constant state of how am I going to make another song like this?
Fuck, mate, that's brutal. Because I'm literally looking at your Spotify. It was the third release. No, it's the second release you put out.
Second release ever.
That's fucking awful. The pressure, mate.
I know. And I'm and it was just such a, I didn't even think about the song when I was making it. No. I was just playing around with all of these weird sounds. The structure is so random. There's nothing formulaic about that song. It was pure, came from just a place of, I don't know what that place is because I can't get back to it. It's just, I made the song. Yeah, it's crazy. It's amazing that the song is done so well, but it's also it happened so early in my career that I'm how do I make something so creative again?
It's a really weird time in your career when it's like that, but you'll get through it.
Yeah I'm in a bit of a creative rut at the moment. I it's funny, when I was first making music, Kai would always say to me, because I was always oh, I'm having so much fun, these songs are coming together so easily, and I'm constantly saying all this stuff, and he's like, yeah, okay, well, just wait.
And, at least you had him being the negative Nancy in the back, bringing you down.
Definitely was, because he was this isn't gonna last, this is not how it always is, trust me. And then after I have released a few more songs, they've done pretty well, I'm continuously getting support from people and stuff, and it's really amazing. But now all of a sudden there's labels that are we want music from you, we need it by this time, we need this, and this pressure is coming in on me, and all of a sudden, and now I'm how do I keep ahead of trends? How do I not sound like this? How do I do this? How do I do this? And I'm there are days where I'm in the studio trying to make something unique and fresh, and then I'm this is awful, and I'm not even enjoying it. I'm definitely going through a bit of a slump creatively right now, where I have so many works in progress and I can't get anything across the finish line because I'm putting so much pressure on myself.
It's tough. It's really tough. I had that I think it was 2012 for me, or 13. I released a record called Big Booty, and it was that was my first. I've been releasing since 2008, I think, and then that was my first release that everyone was supporting. And it was similar to you, where Jamie Jones was asking me for an EP for Hot Creations, and at that time Hot Creations was the hottest thing around.
Yeah.
And what I didn't realize, that I was going into the studio writing music for Jamie Jones. I wasn't going into the music writing the record that I've just written before, like, because it was me at that time in my career. Right. And it got to a point where it was just like, I quit music for like 6 months. I literally like stopped everything, stopped producing, didn't go in the studio for 6 months. Cause it was just like, there's so much pressure on, and it's only coming from me. It's not coming from anyone else. Like, I don't have to release music on Jamie Jones. It was purely a business thing. If you think about it, it's like, oh, I might have some success now. So now I have to go and do what I need, what I think the industry needs me to do. Where realistically, the industry needs you to do fucking nothing apart from just be you.
Yeah, just keep making the stuff that you love. It's so weird that, like, it's, and you know, my manager is, she's so great. And she's, you know, so here's the thing. This year, as an, another thing is, as an American artist, it's really hard to break into the UK market and the European market.
Okay, let's talk about this, because it's really hard being an English artist as well.
What do you think? Okay, well, then let's talk about it. Because, like, I, so this year, my management is like, cool, let's focus on getting on some European labels. Let's focus on, like, trying to get into the European market so you can get some bookings in the UK. And so this is part of the problem. I'm going into the studio every day and I'm like, is this too American? Like, does this sound too American? Is a UK or a European label going to want this? And it's like, I need to just, like you said, like, it's a business thing. Like, you need to just go make the music that you like. And that's what my manager keeps telling me. She's like, just make the music you like and we'll find a label for it. Like, it's not that serious. But in your head, you're like, no, it is that serious. And I'm so stressed out about it. But yeah,
I think it can. It's tough, but I'll be honest, like, I think there's like a romanticism with the scene in the UK, right? I think there's like a level of like, oh, we have to go and play in the UK and Europe.
Yeah. I mean, do you think it's like a grass is greener type situation?
100%.
Yeah.
I can guarantee you, like, unless you have a hit here, right? And Kai will tell you this. Unless you have it. The thing is, Kai tours very differently over here because he's fucking massive, right? But like, I would say it's way harder in the UK to build a following and to build a career than it is in America. Way harder.
Yeah, Kai is definitely, I mean, Kai has told me that he feels like European or like American fans are loyal. So and like, loyal. If people love you in America, like, they will follow you, they will support you. Even if you release something that's not that great, they will support it. Like, they have your back. Whereas like in the UK, it's a bit more fickle, where like, you could be hot 1 second and then you're shit the next second. Yeah. Everyone hates you. And like, so he definitely has like, he feels, because I think with their career, it's like they've definitely felt like ebbs and flows where they're like, UK loves them, and then they are fucking hated in the UK, or like, you know, people are over them. So I do hear that. But it's also like, I think as an American, you get this like stamp of approval if you can play in the UK. It's like, oh, you're cool if you can go play in the UK.
I get that, but you're living in the city, and I'm just playing devil's advocate to you, if you know what I mean. Like, you have I agree, go play wherever the fuck you want. Exactly. Go make the music whatever you want. However, you're living in the city where house music came from. Like, you're living in a city that is probably way more forefront in music than any city in the UK. Like, without a shadow of doubt, the parties that Auris are throwing, the festivals that Auris are throwing, just in Chicago alone, is on another level. Yeah, you might, you don't have Fabric. You don't have E1, right? But like, you have Spy Bar, you have Smart Bar, you have, what's the massive place? Radius. You have Cermak Hall. You have, what's the other theater?
Concord.
You have Concord. Like, just alone. You have like four clubs, five clubs, venues that have outweigh most venues in the whole of the UK.
Yeah.
And I think
that is so true.
And I think it's also is like seeing what's popular in the UK, right? Like, realistically, like, I know this is not coming out until I don't know when this podcast is coming out, like towards the beginning of the summer, I think in May, but like, or end of April, but like, we don't know what's going to be hot then. But right now, like the music you play and make, it's not hot here.
Yeah.
So like, why change your sound to just be hot here?
Yeah.
It doesn't make sense, because you're just going to be writing music that you absolutely hate.
It's so true. And it's such like a, yeah. I mean, like in my personal opinion, like if I didn't have to travel all the way to Europe all the time and I could just stay in America and tour and play here, like that would be super easy for me. But there is just like this, I don't know, like this thing about being accepted in Europe and the UK. But yeah, you're right. Like also I feel like music changes so quickly over there, like what's in and what's not. I feel like over the last 3 years I've seen like 5 different trends come and go in the UK, and then some of them come over here, some of them don't quite make it, like it's the market is so different over there. So I don't know,
but this is my theory, and I'm really happy to be wrong as well. But for me, it's like people jump onto trends way quicker, and it's like they go so hard on a trend, like so hard until it gets big. And then there's a level of like, it's big for a certain amount of time. Then they're like, oh, I'm too cool for that. Let me go find something else. Whereas America's like, fuck it. We don't need to be cool. I'm just going to milk. Like, how long has tech house been big in America?
Like, and it just seems like it just keeps getting like,
keeps getting bigger, right?
It's now like the new like EDM. Yeah. Like it's so big now that it just has like an uncontrollable fan base.
Yeah, and I think it's probably got another 5 years in.
Yeah, easy. Like, I agree.
I don't see that lasting. Like, I see that lasting longer than EDM. Like, EDM did. Like, I don't see that changing, because it's actually quite palatable music in the grand scheme of things. It's not like what EDM was so in your face. Tech house isn't that in your face.
No. And it's, no, like, it's super accessible, which is why so many people have grasped onto it. And like, you can bring friends that like, I don't really know if I like dance music. We'll just come. You'll hear some edits of some stuff that you probably grew up listening to. You'll like, you know, it's super accessible.
Business music, business club music. That's what it is. Like, they're not fussed about listening to a 2-hour set from Moody Man that like you and I would be absolutely creaming over. But like, they just want to hear tech house bangers of Britney Spears remixes. Cool. Crack on.
Cool. Go have fun.
But yeah, I get the whole UK and Europe thing. I had a conversation with Cascade on the podcast. Like, it's come out in a few weeks, and like, or it will be out by the time this comes out. But he's exactly the same. He's like, dude, I've had some of the biggest records in the world and still can't get booked in England.
Crazy.
It's mad. Absolutely. It is crazy. Like, I literally was talking to one of my mates in the UK the other day, and this isn't me talking shit on Cascade at all, but it's like just a truth that like, I was talking to one of my mates that was not really in music, and I was like, oh yeah, I spoke to Cascade today. He was like, who's Cascade?
Who? Exactly. Like, no, it's so funny that.
Dude, he just literally played at the Super Bowl in front of 100 million people watching that.
Your friend was also probably like, what's that?
Exactly. Oh, and yeah, so it's, I completely get it, because I have this battle on a regular with my management, and be like, not a battle, but we have this conversation. I'm like, dude, why can't I get an agent in England? Can't even get booked in my hometown. It's just like, is what it is.
It is what it is.
I've accepted it now. It doesn't bother me. But talking about hometowns, you run a party called Dirty Disco?
I do, yeah.
I've done my research.
I've done my research.
I've seen this actually pop up online quite a lot, and I've seen quite a lot of people talking about this party. What's that about? What happened? Tell me about it.
So I, over COVID, when like, you know, there's nothing to do, no one was going out, no clubs are open, I like was just talking to some of my girlfriends about just how much I couldn't wait to like be able to go out to clubs again and stuff. And I realized that so many of my girlfriends were like, I don't go to clubs anymore. Yeah. Like, they stopped going to clubs because they were like, there's just like, the vibe is off in the clubs. Like, there's so many men.
Yeah.
They're creepy. Like, it's just like, I don't enjoy being in clubs anymore. And I was like, wow, I didn't realize that this was such a common feeling amongst women in Chicago.
Yeah.
And like, I just started thinking about, you know, the parties that we have here, the clubs that we have here, and like the energy of the clubs. And I realized, like, I'm friends with so many people that like work at the clubs and stuff that I didn't really experience like the kind of like punter experience, like someone who's just in the crowd. And I realized like there are, the vibes are really, really masculine and really like sort of not great for women. And so I decided, this is when I was like fully diving into music, like, you know, my whole music is my whole life at this point. And I was like, I wonder if I can start something that focuses on really good music, sort of emerging artists, underground music, but also really, really make it a female friendly night. Because that's a lot of the issue is like, if there's a really cool artist that's really underground, it's gonna be mostly men in the crowd. 100%. Like, that's just kind of how it is. So I wanted to create this party that was like fun, and there was like a vibe to the actual party, but also bring these like cool underground artists. I wanted women to be able to like go out and dress up and like feel safe and like sexy and like listen to dance music, because that's how it should be. You know, it's like dance music started in these like really sexy queer spaces, and like everyone felt safe, and that was the whole point of dance music.
Yeah.
And you know, we still have amazing queer parties in Chicago, but you know, a lot of times women don't go to those queer parties. You know, it's like there was just this gap in the market here that I was seeing. And so I started Dirty Disco straight out of COVID. We partnered with Spy Bar. We threw a party every other week there, and it just picked up really quickly. People, you know, after the first party, the vibes were so good, and it just kind of like snowballed from there because so many women were there. And then when there's a bunch of women there, the men have more fun, because it's not just a bunch of aggy men everywhere. Yeah. You know, like, it's just if girls, gays, theys, like, there has to be a mixed pot in a club, or otherwise it's not going to be fun for anyone involved. Like, no one likes a party that's just all one type of patron. It's just not right.
It's boring.
It's just, you have to have a mixed pot. You have to be able to like engage with different people, and like, you know, that's what's fun about going out and listening to music. So that was the whole point of starting Dirty Disco. And it's been a really fun like journey to sort of create this space in the city. And
sick.
It's just fun.
Is there like any rules or anything like that that you kind of like to get more women there, to kind of like make it feel like a safe space? Or is it just something that you just kind of communicated across? Like, how is that?
I think a lot of like this is my first time being like a promoter throwing a party, but I think a lot of the like messaging that you use, like what you put out is what people expect. And I've always been very open about like, none of this creepy shit, like, you know, come here, be respectful, have fun. Like, I'm in the crowd the whole party, walking around, talking to people. Like, you know, if I see someone who's like a weirdo or whatever, like, you know, I'm probably gonna have them taken out.
Yeah.
You know, Aris, I work with Aris on this. So they're very aware of like the energy that I want at my party, and they're really good about, you know, trying to protect that energy and make sure that the vibes are right. But I think in general, people just kind of know, like, you know, some people throw parties and you know it's the kind of party where everyone goes and fucking talks the whole night. And you're like, cool, this is the energy they created with this party. This is their party, and that's fine. But like with my party, it's like, don't come here and talk. Respect the artists, dance, be nice to people. Like, just don't be a dick. It's that simple.
So simple, but so many promoters get it so wrong.
I know. So,
That's cool. I'm happy for you.
Thanks.
Do you have like any plans for the rest of the year for that party?
Yeah, we have. So I'm doing one here in Chicago in 2 weeks.
So that'll be done by the time this podcast comes out.
Okay, so forget about that.
Sorry.
No, it's okay. I forget this is coming out in like May.
Yeah, I can't remember something like that.
But that'll be done too. I'm doing something at Music Week, but that'll be done.
Miami.
We're moving it to Miami. Yeah.
Sick.
And then we do have something planned for later this summer that I can't really talk about yet, but it's really big and it's kind of like around something really special that happens in Chicago. And
just putting out there, is it around Arc Festival?
It might be. It might have something to do with that.
Sick.
So yeah, there's some stuff in the works.
How good is that festival?
Like the best festival ever.
It's fucking amazing.
It's like the first year that they threw it. You know, every festival has these like sort of first year kinks. And you like go and you're like, oh, you know, it could be really great.
Yeah.
Arc was great.
It
was the perfect festival straight off the bat. They got everything right. And it was just like from the crowd to the stage production to the artists that they booked, like everything was perfect. And it's like for people who love dance, like genuinely love dance music, it's like a dream festival. Yeah.
I agree. I played the first year. And I was just amazed because it was straight out of COVID as well.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember my manager couldn't come because he had COVID. And I was like, dude, you literally missed out on one of the best first festivals ever.
Seriously. I felt so proud of Chicago that weekend. What? I was like beaming the whole weekend because I was just like, I can't believe that we have, you know, because like you said, this is the home of house music. And you know, we're, you know, sister cities with Detroit. Like we should have a festival. Like, you know, Detroit has Movement, which is like
the best.
Yeah. Like, you know, it's like it's there, they've done it, it's always perfect, it's always the right vibe. And we didn't have that.
You just had shit festivals, and I don't mean that in a horrible way, and that's no disrespect to the promoters in Chicago, but every festival was more so based on like the more commercial side of house music, and it was always just a shit vibe. And I feel bad by saying that, but it's the truth.
No, it is the truth, and it was just always like really commercial music, like just your typical commercial festival was all we had here. So for the people at Aris to put together Arc and like to be there the first year, and like I just felt this like insane pride in Chicago. And I was just like the whole weekend I was just like, fucking finally we have something where we can be like, yes, this is the home of house music and we have this really fucking cool festival. And like it's just it's amazing. I'm so happy we have Arc and I can walk to it from my house.
That's perfect.
So it's like it doesn't get better than that.
That was the best thing about Movement when I lived in Detroit itself. It was just like literally a drive away from my house, and it was just like it's the best being able to play in your home city and just like be in your own bed that night. People don't realize how good that is. It's the, like best, the best feeling
ever.
Waking up on the Sunday and not having to go to the airport to fly home is literally the best feeling.
I love Movement so much too. Like,
are you going this year?
I love Detroit. I'm playing. Yeah, it's been announced. I'm playing this year.
What day?
Shit, I don't even know. Saturday, I think.
Okay, are you staying the whole weekend?
No, I have a show in New York on one of the days of. Oh wait, I think I'm playing Sunday in Detroit. I don't know.
I'm
staying for 2 days.
Cool.
Are you playing Sunday?
Yeah.
I know I'm gonna be there for 2 days. I have a show on like one of the days I'll be in New York, but then the other 2 days I'm definitely gonna be in Detroit.
Are the boys playing as well?
Mm-hmm.
Sick. That'd be cool.
Yeah. Well, I'll be there. I just like I love Detroit. Like I hadn't really spent that much time in Detroit until recently, and it's just such a sick city.
It's cool, isn't it?
Really cool. It just has a vibe. It's like there's an energy in Detroit, especially like when you're like doing things in the dance scene. Yeah. Like it's just the energy is really good.
Is for me it's similar to Chicago but just way smaller. Like the community's so small. Like in Chicago you can throw quite a lot of parties in one night and they will be successful because there's such a big population, where Detroit the population is like 600,000 now. It's tiny.
Mm-hmm.
But like there's something about Detroit. It's just the grit, I think. It's been so like diminished for so many years. And it's been so shit for so many years. It's just the community just joins together.
But I think that's where like, and I think like historically, like those are the spaces where dance music like flourishes.
Yeah.
Like it's always those like communities that like have just, that like need that like, something, and it's like dance music is always a thing. And I feel like I love playing in Detroit because, and there's not that many markets like this, but it's like the people there just want to dance. They're not like chin strokery. They're not like, they don't go into these parties like, I have the best taste in music ever and you have to play my taste. It's like, you can play, like when I've played in Detroit, I could go in places that I can't go in like so many other cities with my music. Like you can take people in all sorts of directions and they're so open-minded and so just down to dance. And it's like, it's just so refreshing playing in Detroit. I love it so much.
Yeah, it's a vibe. I love that city so much. Mm-hmm. It's weird because it's like downtown's really nice now, but there's still a lot of shit in Detroit, which is such a shame because it's like you leave like 10 minutes out of downtown and you're in like the hood and it's not safe at all. But I really hope that something gets good in Detroit.
Yeah, I mean, hope so. If they're building out the downtown, like, you know, stuff takes time. But yeah, yes. I know Detroit had a rough time for a while now.
Yeah, hopefully. But yeah, sick. Well, I'll see you at Movement.
Yeah, I'll see you at Movement.
It's gonna be good. Right, let's wrap this up. We've just done over an hour. So thank you so much for coming on. Really enjoyed chatting with you. How can people get involved with you? How can people follow you? How can people follow your party, et cetera, et cetera?
Yeah, so I'm on Instagram, Azeka. Twitter, Azeka. Be warned. I am
Terrible jokes.
A hot mess. Yeah, I make really bad jokes. Don't get mad at me. Yeah, you can follow Dirty Disco Shy on Instagram. Throwing parties there. You can look out for parties in other cities too. If you live in other cities, we're moving out this year. And yeah, I'll be at a bunch of festivals this summer. Some that haven't been announced yet. Some that have. So check them out.
Happy days, mate. Thank you so much for coming on, and I will see you very soon. Keep safe.
Cool. Thanks for having me.
Bye. Peace. And that's a wrap. Big love to everybody that came on. Big love to everybody that listened. If you are listening and you enjoyed this episode, please share it on your social media. Please share it with your friends. Please give it to anyone. I'd love it if you did. Give us a review and keep safe. Till next time.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe came along and changed everything. With Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. Now I can accept in-person, contactless payments right from my iPhone. No extra hardware required. What's truly remarkable is how I can cater to all of my customers' payment preferences, whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe ensure a smooth checkout experience every time. And it's not just me. Stripe helps businesses of all sizes, from local markets to global retailers, scale quickly and stay agile. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.